Hello, everybody. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all kinds of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, as we always do for new listeners, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or that between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle, hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients, rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but is not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as problems like chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussive syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many, many other health issues. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what is happening, as well as to offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Before we get started on today's topic, let me just remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the shows on back pain, nutrition, carpal tunnel syndrome, concussion, and allergies, by going to Robin Hood Radio's website, then the On Demand section, then scroll down and select the Your Health shows. Then you can click on the individual show by topic and listen to it. It's a fantastic service. Well, so here we are in the doldrums of winter. It's a good time to embark on a deeper study and consideration of a complex, fascinating, and potentially debilitating area of health and well-being in the human body, the gastrointestinal system, the GI system for short. The GI system is the largest system in the body and involves many different organs and tissues with a complex regulatory system that relies on its own nervous system, the enteric nervous system. Our GI system, like the skin, interacts directly with the outer world every time we eat and drink. It is literally our lifeline by which we take in food and water, process these, and eliminate the waste. A vast and complicated task in and of itself. But it does much more than that as well. The GI system is not just a long curvy tube with a hole at either end. It's truly an anatomical and physiological marvel that is approximately 30 feet long, about the width of a tennis court. And that 30 feet of complex anatomy is curled back around on itself many times and housed in a 5 to 6 foot tall body only 1/5 of its own length. That's amazing. So we're going to spend 2 or 3 radio shows talking about what the GI system is and does, how it works, what can go wrong, and how to keep the GI system healthy. It's going to be a fascinating journey into our own biology and health. It's going to be a little technical as well, because there's a lot to cover, and in order to really understand how to keep that system healthy, we need to understand how it works and what all the parts are. So hold on to your hats. If you get a little lost or confused, remember, you can go back and listen to the podcast of the show, which is one of the great things about having that available. Okay? So, we're going to start, as we always do, with basic anatomy. And I'm going to work to draw a picture for you in words of this complex multi-organ system, which, as we mentioned, is not just a tube that goes from head to bum. We'll start by naming all the organs of the GI system, and you may be surprised by who they all are. And let me just clear up a little vocabulary issue right now, right up front. The GI system includes all the functional organs and tissues that ingest, process, and eliminate waste from food, water, and anything else that we ingest. The GI tract includes the organs from mouth to anus that are the internal tract of those ingested materials once they're chewed and swallowed. So the GI system includes the GI tract, and the tract consists of the mouth, the esophagus, which is our food tube in the throat, our stomach, our small intestine, large intestine, rectum, and anus. In addition to the GI tract, the whole GI system relies on the salivary glands, the tongue, our taste buds, and teeth, as well as the liver, pancreas, gallbladder, and enteric nervous system. Ho-ho, that is huge. So we're going to take an osteopathic look at all the GI system elements from stem to stern. Let's start with the mouth. Our oral cavity is designed for multiple purposes, but chief among those is ingestion of food and fluids. Food is mechanically broken up with chewing, which relies on the tongue, jaw, teeth, and numerous muscles of the face, head, and neck to achieve, including that tongue, which is an incredibly sensitive and agile muscle. But chemical digestion of food begins in the mouth as well, with enzymatic digestion of certain carbohydrate components catalyzed by saliva, which is secreted by the salivary glands. There are major and minor salivary glands. The salivary glands produce the fluid saliva that acts in digestion, lubrication, and even immune function in the mouth. The three pairs of major salivary glands are the parotid, submandibular, and sublingual glands. They are the larger salivary glands that produce most of our saliva. The parotid glands are the biggest of those. There are two parotid glands, one in front of each ear on either side of the face. The submandibular glands are smaller than the parotids. There are also two submandibular glands. Each of those sits behind the lower jaw, just under the chin and tongue on either side of the face. The sublingual glands are the smallest of these major salivary glands. There are two of those. Each of the sublingual glands is deep in the floor of the mouth on either side of the tongue. Sublingual means under the tongue. Saliva from the sublingual glands enters the mouth through many small ducts. Those are the major salivary glands. The minor salivary glands are scattered throughout the lips, mouth, and throat. There are upwards of 1,000 of them, each with a single duct that secretes saliva directly into the mouth or throat. From the mouth, food passes into the throat. As we chew our food, hopefully slowly enough to allow for thorough mechanical breakup and salivary digestion, as we chew, our tongue manipulates the food into small enough portions for us to swallow without choking. As we swallow, the food passes into the esophagus. The esophagus is the muscular food tube that connects the mouth to the stomach via the neck. The esophagus sits next to the trachea, which is our windpipe or the air tube that passes to the lungs from the nose and mouth. A special muscular flap called the epiglottis closes over the opening in the trachea when we swallow to prevent food from going down our air tube and choking us. At the same time, the esophagus initiates wave-like contractions that push the food portion down the tube. These are called peristalsis, and moves the food toward the stomach. You can see that chewing and swallowing are not a simple task in and of themselves and require remarkable coordination, all of which we actually begin to learn even before we are born. The esophagus has to pass through an opening in the diaphragm called the esophageal hiatus. It's actually a little opening in that big muscle of the diaphragm. Recall that the diaphragm is a large flat muscle that spans the full width of our chest just under the ribs, and it rises and falls during breathing to help make possible the pressure changes needed in the lungs to allow air to enter the lungs. After passing through that diaphragm, the esophagus empties into the stomach through the lower esophageal sphincter. This is an area of increased contractile muscle in the esophagus tube that helps to keep the stomach juices inside the stomach and prevent reflux. It's sometimes called the gastroesophageal sphincter, and it's key. Just under the diaphragm sit many key organs of the GI system, including the stomach. The stomach is a roughly kidney-shaped, or old leather wine bag-shaped, if you prefer, muscular sac that is tipped up under the diaphragm under the lower ribs of your left side. After passing through the diaphragm via the esophageal hiatus, the esophagus opens into the stomach through that gastroesophageal sphincter. This sphincter stays closed to keep stomach contents within the stomach, except when a portion of swallowed food reaches the sphincter at the end of its peristaltic course down the esophagus. Then that sphincter relaxes to allow the food to pass into the stomach, and then it tightens up again afterwards. Once in the stomach, food is subjected to acids and enzymes secreted from the cells lining the stomach and to mechanical churning via rhythmic muscular contractions of the stomach walls. The stomach lining is protected from its own digestive juices by secreting a layer of mucus that lines the stomach itself. After about 1 to 2 hours, this partially digested food slurry, which is called chyme, is ready to move on and is passed through the pyloric sphincter at the far end of the stomach into the early part of the small intestine called the duodenum. The duodenum is the beginning of the 20 feet or so of small intestine. Through a complex and extraordinarily sensitive set of valves, additional digestive juices from the pancreas, we're going to have more on this organ later, and bile from the liver and gallbladder, and we'll have more on these characters later also, are secreted into that duodenum to complete the breakdown process of the chyme. From the duodenum, the digested food mass moves on into the loops of small intestine. The small intestine is approximately 20 feet of looped muscular tube that coils back and forth through the middle of your abdomen. As the digested food passes through the small intestine, all the proteins, carbohydrates, and micronutrients that have been broken down by digestion into absorbable components are absorbed and sent into the bloodstream to be utilized appropriately by all the tissues of the body. Beneficial bacteria are important in releasing many vitamins and other micronutrients that we need for nutrition so that they can be absorbed. What is left at the far end of the small intestine is mostly indigestible fibers and related materials and water. And this mass passes into the large intestine, aka the colon. The colon is a large tube-like organ that can be thought of in regional sections And that begins by ascending upwards from the junction with the small intestine, which we call the ascending colon, then turns a corner and crosses the width of the abdomen, logically called the transverse colon, then turns another corner downwards and descends towards your rectum and anus, also logically the descending colon. And along the way, it develops a curved region called the sigmoid colon that ends in your rectum. The colon is home to more than trillions of helpful bacteria, and occasionally not so helpful bacteria, that complete the digestion process of the remnant proteins and other materials. The colon also resorbs as much water as possible from the indigestible remains. What is left at the end of the colon's work is stool, which we pass out of our bodies as waste in a bowel movement. One of the most underrated and essential normal processes in medicine and society at large. The rectum is a flexible tube of muscular tissue serving as a stool holding area above the anus, which is the opening from which we excrete stool. The anal canal extends from the rectum to the actual anal opening and is controlled by a complex system of nerves that allow for voluntary control of a pair of coordinated sphincters, the external and internal sphincters. That allows us to decide when and where to move our bowels. Now let's go back and get introduced to the other organs along the way that are part of the gastrointestinal system that we haven't yet met. The pancreas. The pancreas is a tongue-shaped organ that sits behind the stomach. It has two different kinds of functions that rely on different tissues housed in that same organ. As a part of the digestive system, the pancreas secretes pancreatic juice containing digestive enzymes into the duodenum that assist digestion and absorption of nutrients in the small intestine. These enzymes help to further break down the carbohydrates, proteins, and fats in the chyme. The pancreas is also part of the hormonal endocrine system, producing a number of important regulatory hormones, including insulin, which is so important in blood sugar absorption and regulation. But we won't get into detail into the pancreas endocrine role here. The liver and the gallbladder are next. The liver is the second largest organ in the body, only after our skin. It weighs about 3 pounds. And sits up against and under the diaphragm on the right side of the abdomen, opposite to the stomach. It has many roles, including digestion, detoxification, immunity, carbohydrate and nutrient metabolism, among others. We can't get very far without a healthy liver. In its role in the digestive system, the liver is our source of bile, the fluid that helps us to digest fats. Bile is produced in the liver in small amounts rather constantly, and that bile is conducted to the gallbladder for storage through an ingenious system of vessels and ducts, and from which the bile is released into the duodenum for fat digestion as the food material passes into the duodenum. The gallbladder is a small sac hidden under the liver. The gallbladder doesn't produce bile, it stores it for ready use on demand. Whew, that's an incredible amount of basic information on our digestive system, and we've only begun our exploration. But before I run out of time here, let's review what we talked about today to leave you with a picture of that brilliant system. And remember, you can listen to this show again on the podcast. So to review, we eat food that is chewed in our mouths and begins digestion through release of saliva from the oral salivary glands. We swallow the food into our esophagus, the food tube, at the back of our throats, and avoid getting it into our airway through a complex coordination relying on the upper esophageal sphincter that opens to receive food and the epiglottis valve that closes off the adjacent airway, our trachea. The food moves down the esophagus through peristaltic waves and enters the stomach through the lower esophageal sphincter. Once in the stomach, acidic gastric juices are released, and the stomach begins rhythmic contractions that mechanically and chemically break down the food mass into a mixture called chyme. The food passes from the stomach to the duodenum, which is the beginning of the 30 feet of coiled small intestine, where digestive juices from the pancreas and bile from the liver via the gallbladder further break down the chyme into readily absorbable compounds and nutrients. The chyme passes along the length of the small intestine through rhythmic contraction in the small intestine, where nutrients are absorbed into the blood for use. At the end of the small intestine, the remaining mass passes into the large intestine, the colon. While in the colon, the water and any remaining nutrients are absorbed, and what is left is stool, which is stored in the rectum until it is voluntarily evacuated from the anus during a bowel movement. How is all this regulated? What was that enteric nervous system? What can go wrong? What is that so-called gut-brain connection I've been hearing about? What about all those friendly bacteria I keep hearing about? How do I keep my GI system healthy? These are some of the questions we'll begin to answer in our next couple of shows, so stay tuned. But meanwhile, I do also want to mention that osteopathy is very useful in dealing with the GI system. A good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be especially helpful for gastrointestinal issues of all kinds. Working gently with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, capsules, and associated tissues, including that diaphragm, which has such a great influence on the form and function of the associated digestive organs. We'll discuss all this in much greater detail also in our next show when we tackle some common GI issues. Well, that's really all I have time for today. Thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we are at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours, Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. Meanwhile, I'll be looking forward to being with you next time, every other Friday at 12:30 and Sunday evenings at 5:30. Take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.